Welcome back to Following Noadon Stormlight Podcast. And welcome in to a new mini-series as we prep for Wind and Truth coming out in December. Tor, which has a new publisher like Reactor or something, is coming out with preview chapters, and we will be covering them week to week. I have Tim and David joining me for the next couple months here to cover some Stormlight preview chapters. Tim, how are you?
Awesome. I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to talk with you guys about this and interact with the community.
David, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited about these preview chapters, and I love that we can kind of force ourselves to read through them slowly and analyze them as they come out, and without the spoiler guard shackles on. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. A little bit of prep before we throw it into the intro. So we will be covering the prologue of Wind and Truth today. And as far as spoiler scope, we are going to go with anything that is published and then any pre-release chapters up until that point. So for today, that would be the prologue, but we're not going to be talking about any Words of Brandon chapters that we've received over the last like 2 years or so. And we're not going to be talking about any unpublished like short stories or Secret Project 5, for example. We're not going to be talking about anything unpublished other than what we're getting from Tor week to week. So with that said, let's roll intro, and then I'll throw it to Tim for our first topic for the prologue of Wind and Truth. All right, Tim, where do we start?
All right. Well, we start off with Gavilar. And I know I just read this earlier today, but I'm trying to remember how it does actually start. But I'll start us off with the Stormfather. The Stormfather is a very big part of the prologue and everything that goes on here. And I think we'll just get it over with. What do you guys think of the Stormfaker? Is the Stormfather really the Stormfather, or is this actually someone else pretending to be the Stormfather? Do you have any thoughts there?
So we're going to be referencing this quite a bit this episode only, I think. There was we received a rough draft of this like 2 years ago, and or even longer than that, 2.5 years ago. And at that time, I was convinced that this was not the Stormfather with what we were given in those chapters. And if you haven't read it, it's just really weird. Like there's just some really odd things. I mean, there's some that make the final draft for sure. But when I read this chapter yesterday, I came on with the conclusion that Sanderson was shying away from giving us question marks on whether this was the Stormfather and really laying into, no, this is a precursor at least to the Stormfather that we know in Oathbringer and Rhythm of War. I was pretty convinced that this is real.
I basically on the exact same page as Trevor there, because when I read the preview chapters, there were so many inconsistencies with what we know about the Stormfather, his abilities, the way he speaks, his goals, that I was like, I have this laundry list of reasons that I actually like typed out of why this cannot be the Stormfather. And I was pretty sure it was Ishar. And I read this one, and when I finished reading the prologue, even before I finished reading it, I was like, my laundry list is gone. He covered everything. It was just the fact that it was a rough draft and he smoothed it all over. There are still a couple questions, but they aren't big enough questions to me to say this isn't the Stormfather. It's more like, what changed about the Stormfather?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. It definitely feels like the Stormfather is just trying to be sneaky. And, you know, we know that he changed over his bond later with Dalinar.
It really makes me beg the question, just in general, how different are, like, first drafts from final copies? Like, are these alpha readers and beta readers that are coming back to Brandon, or did he, like, purposely throw those in there on the first draft to make us have a bunch of questions? Like, what was going on there? Because, I mean, the differences are pretty substantial. The Stormfather gives... Well, actually, one of the big questions we had still does make the final draft, and it's the Herald dying. Mm-hmm. So, like, right 80% of the way through the prologue, the Stormfather, like, shakes awake, and it's like, oh, a Herald just died. And then I remember talking about this 2.5 years ago with some people in the community. Have we ever seen a precursor to that? Like, is there anything that would give us evidence that the Stormfather would know that? Because now that comes back up, and I'm not surprised, because that was in the first draft. But I feel like if I hadn't read that first draft, maybe I would be questioning the Stormfather more.
I would say there's two points that are conflicting in my head here, because the first point is the Stormfather has clearly taken over a lot of the duties that Honor had. After Honor was shattered, the Stormfather is not the same as he was before. He's like a cognitive shadow of Honor, and he gives the visions, and he's responsible for accepting the oaths and things like that, which Honor would have been doing before. And so with that, maybe, you know, the Stormfather, while Honor was alive, would not be able to, you know a Herald died, but this, you know, weird hybrid Stormfather Honor would probably be very closely connected to the Oath Pact. Now, on the other hand, there is a scene near the end of Rhythm of War when Dalinar sees the connection between Nael and all the other Heralds. And he literally visualizes it, and then he uses that to sort of see some of Nael's past. He did not see a connection line to the Stormfather. There was a specific count, and it was to the other Heralds. So I don't know if maybe he was just seeing the Nael bond, and there's other connections that Nael would have to other people that he wasn't seeing, right? Like, it's not like Nael only has connections like that, but it is an interesting point.
I think the biggest point in favor of this being the Stormfather is just the inherent connection to Honor's power, that, as you're saying, the Stormfather has now taken over almost the mantle, the remains of what's left of Honor, and they're definitely connected to Honor. So even though he didn't see the connection to the Stormfather, I think the Stormfather's connection and, like, leveling up, so to speak, to take over a lot of Honor's responsibilities, I think could encompass that.
I think it was interesting that Gavilar and the Stormfather had a conversation about Noadon meeting the Heralds. Was that in the, that was not in the original, from 2.5 years ago. I feel like I would have noticed that, because he asks if Noadon has met the Heralds, and the Stormfather says yes, but that comes right after the Stormfather like straight up lies to Gavilar about the Heralds being dead. So that was another piece of evidence last time we read this on the first draft, that the Stormfather was not who he said he was, because he was lying to Gavilar, and he still is in this final. So does he just not fully trust Gavilar? Because have we ever had evidence that the Stormfather's lying to Dalinar?
I think there's a few compound things that you touched on there. The first thing I want to touch on is timeline. I'm pretty sure Noadon is very, very early in history, way before Honor died. In fact, he predates the Radiance because right. he mm-hmm. wrote The Way of Kings, and The Way of Kings was the foundation for the Radiant Oaths. So I mean, he certainly would be around when the Heralds were around.
Sure.
Because the Heralds predate the Radiance and Nail Bonds.
Yeah, and Andy was a king during a return. So
yeah,
it would make sense that they would work with kings.
I think I used the term Nail Bond earlier when I meant Oath Pact. I'm not, if I did, I apologize. I did mean Oath Pact for the connections. Mm-hmm. In terms of, has the Stormfather lied to Dalinar? I think yes. I think the biggest example is him lying to Dalinar about why the Radiance caused the Recreants, why they gave up on their oaths.
Does he give him an explanation, or does he just not tell him?
I'm going off of memory. Oh, do you know, Tim?
I'm pretty sure he just refuses to say.
I thought he said it was something to do with, he definitely has some lines about it. Like,
okay.
Honor was dying, and normally he would comfort them about the fact that humans are not native to Roshar. But instead, at the time, he was just ranting about stuff and it made things worse.
Okay. Yeah. So, I do remember that.
But I'm pretty sure that's not the whole story. So it's lying through omission, right? I don't know if. Sure. He ever lied straight up, like just gave false information, like the Heralds are all dead. But I could see him twisting things to be like, well, technically they're dead because they're all crazy, right? They're not who they used to be. So, I mean, you could justify it being a mm-hmm. metaphorical dead, but at the same time, it does feel like a bigger lie. Though I do think the Stormfather has very much lied through omission, so.
Well, talk about lying. At one point, the Stormfather says he specifically was looking for a Colin family member, and he's looking for a champion. Do you think he's telling the truth there, that he's looking for a champion? And why do you think the Colin house would matter?
The longer we go in this episode, the less I'm convinced that this is actually Stormfather. I'm talking myself out of it again. Go ahead.
Tim or Trevor, you'll have to back up my memory here again because I don't have notes on this, but doesn't the final vision that Dalinar gets, which we know also Gavilar got that vision, which we can get into later, that final vision, Honor says, choose a champion.
He does, yes.
And so I think the Stormfather is basically bound by Honor to give the visions and find a champion. So I think that does line up with it being Stormfather.
Mm-hmm.
I'll circle back to that in a second. In that same vision, Honor also mentions the Dawn Shards. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if, because there's a suspicious lack of Dawn Shards on Gavilar's to-do list, that if he's leaving that out and he doesn't want... The reason why I'm not convinced this is the Stormfather anymore, and I was 15 minutes ago, is there is so much key information that he's not giving Gavilar or lying to Gavilar to deliberately mislead him. So throughout this whole prologue, the final prologue, Gavilar is jumping to the conclusion that I'm going to be a Herald. I'm going to take the place of the Herald. I'm going to be Talon's replacement. And the Stormfather consistently says, I didn't say that. You make assumptions. But he also doesn't correct him. Like, the Stormfather that we know today in Rhythm of War, like, he's cagey, but he's not, like, deliberately misleading Dalinar, I don't think. With everything that we've gotten so far. So, that makes me wonder either the Stormfather is more malevolent to Gavilar, which certainly could be, or I got this crazy idea in my head that I'm not going to acknowledge.
No. I could I'd really like to see hear... it being. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I was actually just going to pass it to you, Tim. But I have some thoughts, but I wanted to pass it to you first before I steal the floor. So,
I was just going to say, I really think it could be Ishar because there are so many heralds there that night. They're all messing with all of these different things. So I could see that. I wouldn't be surprised, but I do think it would be strange to try and have the subterfuge for less than a book.
Okay, so I'm still fully on board with this being the real Stormfather. And to address a couple of your points, Trevor, if I can remember what they all were. The first is, we know that Spren change when they have the nail bond. They sort of, we all know that. And the stronger the bond, the more the Spren changes, and also the human changes. And so we can't really compare Stormfather unbonded to Stormfather third ideal bond with Dalinar.
Sure.
With Dalinar's own, like, really, Dalinar has grown so much that he's a really good influence on the Stormfather, to be honest. And I got the impression, I don't know where this impression came from, so maybe one of you can back me up, but the Stormfather was doing the job because he was forced to, but anywhere that he could wiggle out of it, he did. So if he saw wiggle room and like, okay, I'm supposed to give these visions, but I don't want to really be doing this. I'm not on board with this. I'm just forced to do this as a mandate from honor. So I'm going to give the visions. I'm going to find people. I'm going to give them visions. I'm going to talk to them about it, but I don't want to bond them. So I'm going to sabotage that in any way I can.
I think you've definitely got something there. He doesn't volunteer any information that he doesn't need to. Like, he doesn't tell Dalinar that he can go into the visions until Dalinar specifically asks, that kind of stuff.
I wonder, the crazy thought that jumped into my head is less crazy the more I think about it with what you just said, David. I wonder if the more honorable you are, or the more you're aligned with honor, the more the Stormfather aligns with you. So obviously Gavilar is not where he should be to bond the Stormfather. So I wonder if that's our answer, that the Stormfather knows this is not going to work out, or is pretty sure this is not going to work out, and he's just here because he was told to be here. So he's deliberately not volunteering everything he has.
The form of malicious compliance.
Yeah.
I think that leads us into another point I wanted to talk about with the Stormfather. Which is Gavilar trying to fish out the oaths as if you can just say a magic password.
Yeah.
And I don't think he even knows he's looking for the Night Radiant oaths. I think he wants to be a herald, and he thinks that you just say some magic password and you become a herald. And he's just trying variations of it constantly. And the Stormfather, if he is doing malicious compliance, he's kind of encouraging that, almost like, oh, you almost have the words now, to like, because he knows he doesn't want to bond Gavilar. So he doesn't want to encourage him on the path that we all know, which is you have to internalize it. Saying it is just kind of even unnecessary sometimes. Like, when did Kaladin actually say the first ideal? He kind of just internalized it. He learned about it, and that was enough. So,
right.
Basically, there's one point where Gavilar says, give it to me now. Make me a herald. I need it. And the Stormfather is like, oh, that was really close. And I'm just like, no, I was that close to any.
Yeah.
I've been reading The Lost Metal, and Moonlight has a safe in the back room of the safe house for the Ghostbloods, and has an intent lock on the safe. You have to have the intent to unlock the safe with the correct password in order for it to unlock. And if you were told the password, and the person who had the original password did not intend to give it to you, like if you forced it out of them under duress, then it's not going to unlock. So that type of thing where it's all about your intent, back to your Kaladin thing. When did Kaladin say the first ideal? I mean, his intentions were good with Bridge Four, so he was there.
It kind of reminds me of the end of the first Harry Potter book, where Voldemort couldn't get the... Are we spoiling Harry Potter? I think it's safe.
we didn't disclose that for spoiler scope. Go ahead.
I guess skip ahead if you haven't read Harry Potter and you care about that. But Voldemort couldn't get the Philosopher's Stone from the mirror because he wanted it. And you had to not want it in order to get it out of the mirror.
So
yeah, a lot of similarities there.
So there's a name drop. There's a name drop. And this is not his Roshar code name. Gavilar mentions Vasher by name. No one has done that in the Stormlight Archive yet. And his name is Zile on Roshar, and he mentions Vasher. Where did that come from? And they don't even dwell on it. They just move on in the chapter.
And it's new.
Yeah. What? Do you guys have thoughts on that? What is going on with the Vasher name drop?
It was surprising because it seemed like Gavilar was saying he was his special scholar who found anti-void light and various other things and was working with them. And the Zile we know is grumpy and upset, and he's a sword master. Like, okay, why did he go to Roshar in the first place? It seems like maybe it was more along this side to study things, be a scholar. And then what turned him into this grouchy old swordmaster?
Yeah, so it's kind of split up, right? You kind of have to read between the lines, and I'm assuming we're not assuming too much, which is a weird thing to assume. But like at one point he mentions, I have a secret scholar who no one knows about, and it's not this, and it's not this. When he's talking about the discovery of anti-void light. And then later he mentions Vasher. So you can put two and two together and go, Vasher invented anti-stormlight or anti-void light. Sorry. It makes, honestly, the more I think about it, it makes complete sense that of all people, Vasher, like, he knows so much about just Cosmere mechanics that he'd be able to invent anti-light of all people. And then Navani, knowing that it existed, was able to kind of reinvent it. But I don't think Navani would have ever invented that without an example already existing. The fact that it was Vasher is interesting because Vasher disappears in Rhythm of War. So he's supposedly up to something. Who knows what?
Oh, yeah. It's been a couple years since I read Rhythm of War, but you're right. He is missing.
Yeah, it's been a while for me as well. I was just thinking, like, well, if he knows how to get anti-void light, why didn't he show them earlier?
I think it's too dangerous. Like, anti-light is going to be huge in Stormlight 5. I mean, it wouldn't be introduced in Rhythm of War and then talked about again in the prologue if it's not going to be big, because you're going to have Fused and Radiant Spren permanently dying because it's going to be utilized in battle. And then also, like, are they going to make essentially nuclear weapons, like similar to the Lost Metal, right? Are they just going to make giant bombs? If you want, I can lead that into my theory about the Knight of Sorrows.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, interestingly, and I tracked this down because I thought this was it. If you remember, of course you remember, Gavilar had the meeting with Taravangian. And he mentions, let me see, I have the exact quote written down. I have seen, let's see. Okay, so they come, the Everstorm, the Night of Sorrows. And then it says somehow Gavilar usually felt foolish trying to explain the dangers the Stormfather had shown him. I was like, what do you mean the Stormfather talked about those things? But what he means is the vision that what we actually see at the end of Way of Kings, Honor appears and talks to Dalinar in this case and says, unite them. The sun approaches the horizon. The Everstorm comes. the true desolation, the night of sorrows you must repair. And then there's a Way of Kings epigraph, chapter 5, which, by the way, is not Taravangian's mother. I looked and it's definitely not. I have seen the end and I have heard it named, the night of sorrows, the true desolation, the Everstorm. So I think the prologue is wanting to connect the Night of Sorrows to the Contest of Champions, because Gavilar's talking about champions in the same paragraph as mentioning the Night of Sorrows. But I'm wondering if that's a misdirect, and instead the Night of Sorrows has something to do with anti-light, possibly a big explosion. I don't know which side does it. I would guess the humans, but that's my crazy theory.
Well, so, there's
just real quick. I've always read these as like different names for the same event. And I think that's kind of how you're supposed to read it as a first reader. But I wonder if these are like in order. The Everstorm comes, the true desolation, the night of sorrows.
Definitely.
Do you have something, Tim?
Yeah. You sparked a few thoughts. One, we don't know what L is up to, but we know they're a little crazy, like the rest of the Fused. The Fused are getting really desperate and they just want to be done. So I could see them pulling off something crazy. But the wording of the Night of Sorrows and then you connecting it to an event, that really reminds me of the Battle of Unnumbered Tears from Tolkien's mythology in the Silmarillion. The elves have got they've got Morgoth and they're sieging him, and this Battle of Unnumbered Tears, he breaks out the siege and kills tons and tons of them. And a lot of bad things happen. And that the way it's worded feels very similar to the Night of Sorrows. It's almost a mythological way of referring to a horrible event.
Anyway. I hate to say it, and I don't like bringing this stuff up, but to me, what it brings up in my mind when I hear Night of Sorrows is the Night of Broken Glass in Germany, which is kind of a turning point event where Germans, you know, went around and destroyed property and shops and everything of the Jewish people living there. And so it sort of started the chain reaction of events. And so it's often singled out as like a night that was a very much a turning point for all of that, for the Holocaust. So I imagine that, I don't know if it's intended to evoke the same kind of imagery, but at least for me, especially as a Jewish person, that the Night of Sorrows really evokes the same feelings as, you know, the Night of Broken Glass for me. Right. So it's to me, it feels like just like a turning point where like there's no, it's a point of no return. Like it might not be, I think it's a big event, but also representative of something big changing. And I think, you know, the buildup with anti-light and then our example in Lost Metal of the big bombs using harmonium, like there's going to be something like that in this book too. I can feel it. Sorry to get very heavy there.
No, you're fine. Put my brain back to the shattered planes and how though they shattered, but
yes,
that might be a whole different conversation that we don't need to have. Okay. Ba-Edo Mishram is brought up by name by Rastaris and Thaidakar.
Yes.
Was that in the original draft? I don't.
Yes.
Was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the back cover for the UK edition of this book came out like 2 weeks ago. And on it, it says Shallan and Renarin are going to go investigate Ba-Edo Mishram. So now I'm wondering, is Shallan going to run head-to-head finally with Marais, or Thaidakar or whoever, the Ghostbloods in general, I didn't think we would actually get like a conclusion to Shallan and the Ghostbloods in Stormlight 5, but now I do, because if the Ghostbloods are after Ba'ido Mishram, which I didn't put together up until now, maybe I should have, but I didn't. That whole arc, I could definitely see going somewhere with Thaidakar being interested, and then Ristari's kind of being in the Sons of Honor. Is the Sons of Honor even a thing by the end of Rhythm of War?
I don't think they're gone. So.
Yeah, I don't think they are.
I think it died with Amaram.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Shallan and Ristari's are hanging out in at the end of Rhythm of War, and Thaidakar is looking for Ba'ido Mishram, and now Shallan is, and Ristari's knows where Ba'ido Mishram is. That's a reveal in this, in the final here. So what do you guys think of that whole arc there?
I have some research I did, which okay. I think might be helpful. And I actually did this research before. I mean, I did it again for this podcast, but originally I knew to look for this because I had done this research when I was trying to figure out the whole Ba'ido Mishram thing. And I didn't specifically know it was Kalak, but I had a theory, a pretty good working theory, that a herald was intimately involved in her capture. So let me go over that. So first of all, in Oathbringer, there's epigraphs, chapter 77 through 83. They're all in order, and most of them, except the last one, are marked as like first emerald, second emerald, third emerald. So they're all supposed to be taken together. So let me just read this really quickly. Something must be done about the remnants of Odium's forces. The Parsh, as they are now called, continue their war with zeal, even without their masters from damnation. A coalition has been formed among Scholar Radiants. Our goal is to deny the enemy their supply of void light. This will prevent their continuing transformations and give us an edge in combat. Our revelation is fueled by the theory that the unmade can perhaps be captured like the ordinary Spren. It would require a special prism and Malishi. Malishi is the bondsmith, the one single bondsmith that was alive at the time. Ba'ido Mishram, and I think we learned Malishi was bonded to the Stormfather in Rhythm of War, by the way. Ba'ido Mishram has somehow connected with the Parsh people, as Odium once did. She provides void light and facilitates forms of power. Our strike team is going to imprison her. We are uncertain the effects this will have on the Parsh. No kidding. At the very least, it should deny them forms of power. Malishi is confident, but Ney's daughter, Kuzodo, which, by the way, is a Shin name, warns of unintended side effects. Listen to the Shin. Surely this will bring at long last the end to war that the heralds promised us. So that is the full like emerald paragraph that okay. takes up a bunch of chapters. The chapter right after that, as the duty appointed keepers of the perfect gems, we of the Elscholars have taken the burden of protecting the ruby named Honor's Drop. Let it be recorded. I think that Ba'ido Mishram is in Honor's Drop, and I think the Elscholars hit it. Now, I have a little bit more, and then I'm done. In Words of Radiance, the book before Oathbringer, chapter 58. So Malishi retired to his tent and resolved to destroy the Voidbringers upon the next day, but that night did present a different stratagem related to the unique abilities of the bondsmiths, and being hurried, he could make no specific account of his process. It was related to the very nature of the heralds and their divine duties, an attribute the bondsmiths alone could address.
Wow.
So heralds plus bondsmith connection shenanigans, maybe the Oath Pact. I'm wondering if Kalak was the herald that went with him to capture Ba'ido Mishram, and Malishi used the Oath Pack and connection and other shenanigans to accomplish this. And I'm wondering if not only did this cause all of the problems that we know about, did it also cause the herald insanity? I know that's a lot, but that was my working theory before even this chapter came out.
Okay. So just to be clear, you think current day Rhythm of War, end of Rhythm of War, you think there's two unmade in the King's Drop?
Wait, is the King's Drop the same gem as the one with?
Yes. They put the thrill. They put
no,
the
no,
thrill.
No, no, no. The thrill's in the King's Drop. This is Honor's Drop.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. Yeah. I made that same mistake a couple years ago when I first read it.
Oh. So what's Honor's Drop?
I think it's what Bato Mishram is trapped in. We haven't heard it before.
Okay. So
it's only in this epigraph.
Okay. So okay. I assume I'm not the only one that made that mental mistake.
just no, that. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So there's a gem out there called Honor's Drop. It's hidden somewhere by Ristaris. And
hidden by the Elfcallers.
Okay. What is Kalak?
He is the herald of, you know what?
Is he a truth watcher? I think he's a truth watcher.
I think you're right.
That's my trivia initial guess.
He is Will Shapers.
Okay. So Kalak is somehow involved, or at least knows the location of Ba'ed Omishram. And you're referring to the King's Drop and the bondsmith at the time,
Malishi,
right, pulls Ba'ed Omishram into the gem, and that maybe sparks the radiance, sort of like giving up or Hariatium.
I think it's coincidental because Hariatium, I think, wasn't like an instant event. I think it was the radiance deciding over time to give up their O's, but I think because Bato Mishram was captured before that, it caused something to be wrong,
right?
That then caused Dead Eyes. I also want to point out, because I didn't remember this, but Will Shapers, their surges are transportation and cohesion. So Kalak would be perfect, right?
Yeah.
Transportation and cohesion. Okay.
But I think that, you know, that epigraph says something about like they had to use the herald specifically and something about their divine duties. I think that has to be referencing the Oath Pact,
right?
So I think the Oath Pact was exploited in some way by Malishi, who apparently we learn in Rhythm of War Malishi was extremely good with connection.
Yeah,
Dalinar has a conversation with the Stormfather specifically about Malishi.
Yeah,
so
I do remember that.
I think this is all connected, not to intend a pun, but
wow. Okay. That was a lot more than I was picturing in my head. There's going back to Gavilar a little bit. There's a couple conversations that are like included or omitted in this final here. I didn't go back and read the original, but I remember that Gavilar and Navani having a conversation in the original, and I don't think it's included in this final. That so in the final, Navani peeks in on Gavilar, Ristaris, and Nail, and they're having their conversation. Their conversation's cut short. He has like maybe two paragraphs with Navani, and then she's gone. In the original, I remember a longer conversation with Navani, and he's like a jerk.
So what you're remembering is the Rhythm of War prologue. Even in the first draft, he thinks about Navani a lot, and he's like, and it's in both. He thinks about Navani. He's like, should I include her? No, I have to cut all attachments. It has to be clean because I'm going to live forever. But it does still skip the conversation because we know what happens in the conversation already in Rhythm of War. I took some tiny bit of notes about that just to remind us. So Navani asks about the spheres. He tells Navani to speak to Yasna about Amaram. He tells her she's a fake scholar and not worthy.
Yeah. Okay. That is what I'm remembering then.
And something interesting about this is this, remember, this is in the Rhythm of War prologue, so it's not repeated in this prologue, but this is, this happens before the meeting with Amaram, but, or sorry, it happens after the meeting with Amaram. Wait, does it? No, maybe I'm confusing myself.
Which,
but he tells Navani,
Yasna's meeting Yasna with Amaram, or Gavilar's meeting with Amaram?
Gavilar's meeting with Amaram.
Okay.
Happens after the conversation with Navani.
Yes.
And in the conversation with Navani, he says, tell Yasna to make it right with Amaram. Tell Yasna, you know, Navani's like, she can make her own decisions. But what's interesting is in the meeting with Amaram, Amaram brings up, hey, it didn't go well with Yasna. Can you do something about that? So did Gavilar predict that, or is this kind of an out of sequence event? Like just a...
It might just also be a recurring thing that they're trying to shove Yasna in Amaram's face, and over and over, she's making it clear she's not interested.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. That's what it sounded like from Yasna's prologue as well.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find inconsistencies if I can, just because it's fun.
Yeah.
It can be explained for sure. One thing I do want to point out is, one, Gavilar seems to have distorted the purpose of the Sons of Honor, because the original purpose that Kallak says is to restore the Radiance, and Gavilar distorts that as restore the Voidbringers, which will bring back the Radiance, supposedly. And then that kind of connects with Nail kind of learning, wait, you've got Void Light already. You're trying to return the Voidbringers. Nail is very unhappy with this, and this directly leads to his conversation with Venli, where he tells Venli, they're going to betray you. You are legally allowed to assassinate him. By the way, there's this assassin that's really good at assassinating. You should go you should go get him.
Well, I'm surprised that Nail didn't just kill him there, like do it himself.
He wanted to, but he could not find a legal justification for him to do it himself. He actually tells Venli this.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're right.
And you know, Nail.
Yeah. Just hit that nail on the head.
Well, that's really all I wanted to bring up about that meeting, other than the big thing with Kallak knowing where Bahar Mishram was.
Side note, I wonder if Gavilar had revealed the Stormfather to Nail, if then Nail would have killed him. Because Nail's hunting Knights Radiant when we see him 5 years later.
At the time, I don't think he was hunting Knights Radiant. In fact, I think he started after talking with Venli. I think he kind of brings it up.
Right.
He's like, I need to start killing Radiants to keep the desolations from happening.
Right.
Yeah, I think after this, he goes and he talks with Ishar, and then Ishar convinces him that that's what he needs to do. Almost reversing what Gavilar reversed.
I just, as a side note, I think it's really funny, and this was true 2.5 years ago when we first got this. I think it's so funny how much Gavilar knows, and then how wrong he is by what he seems. So like he gets a tip of the iceberg and then assumes there's a city down there instead of a bigger iceberg. Like he gets way more information than everybody else does. And then because of that his priorities are so incorrect in this prologue. I think
the Stormfather put it best. Oh, Gavilar, there's so much you do not know, so much you assume, and the two never meet.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, if we're also talking about random cool things, I'm listening through, my first time actually listening through in preparation for Book 5 coming out, and I'm near the end of Words of Radiance, and Tiravangian makes this offhand comment where he says that Gavilar mentioned to him that he saw these visions from the Almighty. And I didn't even realize that it was there from so long ago.
Yeah.
All of these things are just hidden, and I'm very impressed.
When Sanderson wrote the words, Zeth Sun Volano, Truthless of Shinovar, wore white on the day he was to kill a king, he knew what Gavilar was up to. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is true, but this little factoid is stuck in my head, that he had 100,000 words of outline for the Stormlight Archive before the Way of Kings was published.
That's an entire Stormlight book.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I remember hearing something similar. In my head, I thought it was like 400,000 or close to 500,000. But once again, it's pulling out of my head from sometime in the past 10 or 15 years.
And even so, he still swapped events around and had to revise. Like,
yeah.
You can no writing of a story survives any amount of planning, apparently.
Yeah.
Just as a side note, Tim, is there any like voices for characters that Michael Kramer has that like completely mismatches what you had in your head? Because you've read it like several times, and then you're now listening to it.
No, I think the biggest thing would have been how you pronounce the names. But I've already talked with you a lot, and so I know how they're pronounced.
Sure.
That threw me for a big loop when you're saying things. I'm like, I have no idea, no idea what you're talking about.
Except that one time Kate Redding said Sidious.
Yeah, I came across one in The Lost Metal the other day where Michael Kramer completely mispronounces a name that he like has said plenty of times before. And I was like, I don't remember what it was, but I don't know. I'll think of it later. Anything else, gentlemen? Before we get to Gavilar's death, I do have stuff to talk about like on the death scene, but before that.
Do we want to talk at least briefly about the meeting with Taravangian? Or did we kind of already cover that? We covered most of it, but I have a question. Is this before or after Taravangian sees the Night Watcher?
I didn't check. I think we could figure that out if we look through the timeline. In my head, I think it's before.
Yeah, he doesn't have handlers with him, I think is a
true
sign.
Mm-hmm. So I think it actually might be after, because Gavilar makes the same assumption that Dalinar does in Oathbringer, that Taravangian's a figurehead, somebody else is running Carbranth. And Taravangian's like pretty slow. So both Dalinar and Gavilar have made that assumption when we see them. So I think it actually might be after the
is that not just something people say about him, you know, forever?
It might be.
Yeah, I think I remember a scene where Dalinar's remembering back when he was younger, talking with Taravangian, and then he had some sort of sickness and then was especially bad after. And I think the sickness is the cover for when he went to the when he went to the Night Watcher.
I'm wondering if, because right after these events is when Dalinar sees the Night Watcher, isn't it?
Correct.
It's a little bit after.
Yeah,
so it's I'm wondering
like half a year maybe.
I'm wondering if Taravangian and Dalinar missed each other by a few days, you know.
The point to each other meme as you walk past.
Yeah,
that would be interesting, actually, the timeline between Taravangian and Dalinar. Mm-hmm. And if I don't want to get into a cultivation discussion, but oh man. Yeah.
when did Lyft go? Did cultivation just bang him out 3 days in a row and then
set up her calendar well?
All right, we can
did we talk about Thydakar?
We haven't totally touched on Thydakar.
A little bit. So, I mean, the big revelation I got was Thydakar and this is actually, this is a Lost Metal epilogue spoiler. I recently read the Lost Metal epilogue maybe a week ago, and Thydakar deliberately does not list Roshar as an ally when he's talking to like his Silverlight buddy. He mentions Cell, he mentions some other planet, I don't remember, but he deliberately leaves Roshar off the list. So I'm wondering if the ramifications of this, like he's trying to get involved in Roshar, and because Gavilar dies here, he's rebuffed. So
the statement in The Lost Metal that worries me even more, I think it's Moonlight, says something like, oh, you don't want to go to Roshar right now.
Right. Yeah.
I don't remember the exact quote, but I'm like, oh no, what's going on? Like, clearly things aren't going well on Roshar at the time. And this is after Stormlight, many years after Stormlight. Well, I mean, I say many, I mean in human lifespan terms, not Cosmere terms. But
do we have a time frame? Is there a specific number?
I thought it was like less than 5 years after.
Okay, but we can, build a
I know it's timeline. It's between Stormlight 5 and 6, and we know that's right. 20 years?
20 or 30, something like that, yeah.
So there's an epic... The letter from Harmony...
That's true.
...mentions he's trying to find a sword, and but he's on his way to doing it. So I think that's around the time he sends Wax to the Ruffs.
Right.
So if we do the math, the Lost Metal is what, like 5-plus years after the events of the first book?
Yeah, between Alloy of Law and the Lost Metal... all four of those books span about 7 years.
And it's, and then how long was he in the Ruffs? Like 10 years or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So this is, could be like 15 to 17 years after, like TLM could be 15 to 17 years after Stormlight 5. But we have to also consider how much time is between the letter that Hoyt sent, or the letter Hoyt received from Harmony, and Stormlight 5 as well. So maybe we cut that down a little bit. It's on the range of a decade plus.
Yeah.
So a little scary there. Kelsier is using a Sion to communicate.
Yeah.
Is he still on Scadrial? Probably.
I would assume so. I'm wondering if that's a... I'm wondering if the Ghostbloods find something in Stormlight 5 to then go take back to Scadrial to go help him out. Because I'm also, I'm maybe wondering, because in the final here, it's mentioned how Thydakar almost looks like an Elantrian. Like, he's kind of like blue glowy, and the spike is also blue glowy.
I thought that was just what people look like when they talk through a Sion.
Yeah, it is, but normally they don't project their whole body. Normally it's just the face, right?
Right.
Was it his whole body, or was it a cloak being carried around by a Sion?
Well, they say the cloak dissolves into like mist, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not saying he isn't a Elantrian. What I'm trying to say is, I think at this point Thydakar is still in the cognitive realm, and I think the Ghostbloods might find something in Stormlight 5, go take it back to Scadrial, and that's how we find Kelsier on Scadrial in the Lost Metal. Like, he's physically there.
Timeline-wise, though, he has the spike in the Sion vision, and he has the spike when he goes to help the Southern Scadrians, which was a while ago.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Never mind. You're right.
I think the spike is what's letting him be in the physical realm, if we want to talk it about Mistborn stuff. But...
yeah, no, it is.
Okay.
There is a quote from him, though, just to end this discussion, maybe. You've begun to play with forces that rip mortals apart by their very axi. Axi are what they call atoms.
Mm-hmm.
Does he know about anti-light?
No. I don't think so. Because how would he know about it?
He might just be referring to, like, god metals, just in general. Like, he's Gavilar's messing with the equivalent of like harmonium, right? And so Thydakar's like, you have no idea what you're doing, messing with, you know, these forces. He, Thaidakar might just be referring to like bombs, you know, like
he also might just be trying to like imply he knows more than he actually does, which is very Kelsier.
Sure.
Yeah.
So in the final here, Gavilar's dying, the Stormfather, like, I refrain to use the term debond because I don't think that's accurate, but there's a text shift that we talked about 4 hours and hours like 2 years ago, and it's still there. There's a text shift of like italics and then to bold and then back to italics. That's all supposed to be the Stormfather. So yeah. we had this huge conversation, and we don't need to super get into it. We had this huge conversation about like the Stormfather then debonded him, and so now he's hearing it audibly as opposed to in his head. But they're specific in this final draft of after that bold text, it then goes back to italics, and Gavilar then again hears the Stormfather in his head. It specifically says that he hears him in his head. So what does the italics and what does the bold mean briefly? We don't need to get into like huge discussions on this. What do you guys think?
I've got nothing.
You go ahead, David.
I've got an Occam's razor answer, which is italics is normal speaking voice and all caps is yelling, basically. Like, how powerful is he talking at the time?
Sure.
Because I feel like he kind of does that in the books normally as well. Like, he switches between italics and all caps.
He does. So
I think it's just a Stormfather thing, like, because the Stormfather can project if he wants to. So like, is he just being conversational, or is he being like, I'm the Stormfather, I am powerful, I am big, looked at eternity through my eyes, right? Like,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me.
But the major inclusion on this final draft is Gavilar is not like giving, or he doesn't think he's giving the anti-void light to Zeth. He's giving it to the Stormfather, and then he's like, and then a hand grabbed it. And I was like, what? that seemed important to me. I don't know how actually important that is, that, you know, Zeth carries around that orb, or he's responsible for it. At least he goes and hides it, and then it comes back up in Oathbringer, or at the very end of Oathbringer. So did Zeth just carry it around because he thought he was supposed to, and that's not what Gavilar meant? Now, I guess, is the canon now.
Well, yeah, Zeth just thought it was a dying man's wish, which is like very important to him. But it makes sense that Gavilar would be talking to the Stormfather, who actually knows what this is, what's going on, and he's getting delirious as he's dying, rather than asking this random assassin. It makes a lot more sense that way.
Right.
The same with the when he's talking, he says,
you
must take this, they must not get it, tell my brother, he must find the most important words a man can say. I think we know what he means by that now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the emphasis.
He's trying to find the words the whole chapter.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 I like the emphasis on he must find the most important words to say, which has not shown up before in any of the quoting.
Interesting. Speaking of quoting, it's really sad, his meeting with Dalinar, where he tells Dalinar, let me find the quote in my notes. And brother, follow the codes tonight. There is something strange upon the winds. It was just manipulation to get Dalinar to get drunk.
Yeah.
And then Dalinar spends so much time up through the Way of Kings thinking about those words and saying, I was drunk and couldn't help my brother. And it wasn't until he realized there was nothing he could have done that he kind of lets it go.
Yeah,
but he's talking with Aedelin. Yeah, and in Way of Kings, he mentions it to Aedelin, those words, and how, that's why he follows the code so strictly. So it's interesting.
when I first read that in the prologue here, I was actually kind of it kind of hurt Dalinar's legacy in my mind, because that entire time Dalinar is pushing to be better, follow the codes, and to learn that it was just Gavilar manipulating him was kind of upsetting to be honest. But I think I've grown past that. I don't think that's a huge deal for me.
So has Dalinar. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think it definitely has that initial visceral reaction of how could he? But then I think it just goes to prove a point of, even when bad people do bad things for bad reasons, good can come from it. And I think that's a very important theme that I pull from Tolkien, and I try to find in other things as well.
So Gavilar hands the torch to Dalinar, but Stormfather says, nope, not him. So what changed?
I don't know if anything changed besides the fact of, like, hold on. I wonder if, no, well, I do have a theory, but I'm not going to get into it. I'll get into it later on a future episode of this miniseries. But at first, the Stormfather's kind of reluctant with Dalinar, right? Like, he sends the High Storm at the end of Words of Radiance because he's like, I guess you guys are dead. Yeah. And then it's only until after they win that battle that he bonds the Stormfather. So I could even just point to that and say Dalinar's proving himself to the Stormfather, and that's what changes.
And I wonder how much choice the Stormfather had in bonding to Dalinar. It didn't seem like he had much choice to me.
I guess that does bring up, how is he choosing who to give the visions to?
I will get into it. That's, I think it's tied to the Way of Kings specifically. If you have the Way of Kings, if you're studying the Way of Kings, it attracts the Stormfather. It attracts honor. Yeah.
I like that a lot, because my theory was a little bit out there, and I kind of like yours better, but I'll say it anyway, which is, it was only after cultivation took interest in him that the Stormfather was like, all right, fine.
Mm, interesting. Okay. I have a whole theory about how Dalinar has a Dawn Shard in him, the Dawn Shard Unity, and the Dawn Shard was in his copy of The Way of Kings. And at the end of Oathbringer, when Odium destroys his copy of The Way of Kings, he then absorbs it into himself. That's the short of it. I would say that if you are studying The Way of Kings, trying to follow Noadon, then that would attract honor, and more specifically the Stormfather.
Hey, that's the name of the podcast.
Anything else, gentlemen?
I just want to reiterate that I actually really like that theory, Trevor. Both the Unity Dawn Shard theory, as well as just if you're studying Way of Kings, that triggers the visions. So
yeah.
But then again, Yasna was studying Way of Kings and she never got the visions. So maybe it's sexist.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the Stormfather's sexist.
Could be. She already had bonded a Spren, though.
True.
So, yeah. Now, for me, what I'm looking for moving forward is, why do the Colins matter as a family? What's their history? And I'm sure that's going to come up.
Does the Stormfather ever call Dalinar son of Tanavest, like he does Kaladin?
No, I did extensive research on this. Kaladin is the only one titled the son of Tanavest. Both of them are called son of honor, but Kaladin is the only one called son of Tanavest.
Which, interestingly, is the name of the sons of honor. Do you think that the Stormfather called Gavilar son of honor, and that's where the name came from?
Maybe.
Or no, Kalak.
No, it came from Kalak.
Kalak would know that too, though.
I think that's just coincidence put there by Brandon.
I think Kalak would know what that means, though.
Maybe.
True.
Maybe Kalak is called the son. Maybe he calls Kalak the son of honor, or maybe he calls the heralds the sons of honor, or whatever.
Yeah. I could see it being the heralds.
All right. Let's close this episode here. For our listeners, our format here is going to be, I think I'm going to try to release these on Sundays, which would be 6 days after the chapter release that we will be discussing. So we will release on Sundays for the chapter release that was the previous week. We are going to aim for half an hour. I know this one went long. I was kind of expecting this one to go long, to be honest, because of the prologue. But we're going to aim for half an hour on these from now until December, when we'll get the full brick on our bookshelves. So thanks for joining me, Tim and David, and we will reconvene next week.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'm excited to talk again next week, and thanks for the podcast.
See you guys next week.